reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus said to the chief priests and the elders of the people, "Listen to another parable. There was a man, a landowner, who planted a vineyard. He fenced it round, dug a wine press in it, and built a tower. Then he leased it to tenants and went abroad. When vintage time drew near, he sent his servants to the tenants to collect his produce. But the tenants seized his servants, thrashed one, killed another, stoned a third. Next, he sent some more servants, this time a larger number, and they dealt with them in the same way. Finally, he sent his son to them. 'They will respect my son,' he said. But when the tenants saw the son, they said to each other, 'This is the heir. Come on, let us kill him and take over his inheritance.' So they seized him and threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. Now, when the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those tenants?" They answered, "We'll bring those wretches to a wretched end and lease the vineyard to other tenants who will deliver the produce to him when the season arrives." Jesus said to them, "Have you never read in the scriptures, 'Tis the stone rejected by the builders that became the keystone. This was the Lord's doing, and it is wonderful to see. I tell you then that the kingdom of God will be taken from you and given to a people who will produce its fruit." Gospel of the Lord. In the great vine-growing regions of the world, and Salvatore was reminding me when he was a boy growing up in Sicily, that's just what there was, those vineyards there and olive groves. It's a reminder how different that sort of agriculture is to other forms of agriculture, because the vine grower behaves towards his vines, his vineyard, more like a passionate lover or a passionate gardener rather than a farmer. Because vines are not a product that chops and changes with the years and seasons. Many of the vines actually live a very long time and can outlive their owners. And just a little like human beings, they offer a different kind of fruit in their youth, in their mature years, even in old age. Of course, we know there are good years and there are vintage years. You all know about that if you're a connoisseur of vintage wines. And the vineyard is a favorite image of God's people, both in the Old and the New Testaments. Jesus uses it, Isaiah, the psalmist, many other bits of it speak of the scriptures, speak of the closeness of the Lord to his people. The vine and the vineyard are where God is with his people. And he works with them to produce the fruit. His long-term, as it were, investment is in their success. And that's why, of course, the Spirit that pours the gifts on us are in order that we, as the Lord's vine, may produce the fruits of the Spirit. But I want you to think of that first reading, because the first reading, Isaiah, moves almost from being a prophet to be a singer. He's the minstrel who's singing a ballad, a love song about his vineyard. But it's a love song that's got a bitter owner at the end of it, describing how he's been jilted by his love, the vines. When the song begins, it's light and joyful, celebrating the establishment of the vineyard. But the mood changes when the vines, planted in choice, fertile soil, lavished with tender care, loving care, yield nothing but sour grapes. And the singer then reveals himself to be the owner rather than, as at the first, he speaks of it as a friend. And he explains that he's done his best for his vineyard, but he's been let down. And we, the listeners, and that's why we have it this morning, is our ask to judge between the vineyard and the owner. And then we realize the song is about the vineyard of God. and we're in the vines producing those miserable grapes. And so the song ends with that harsh, bleak statement: he expected justice, but found bloodshed; integrity, but only a cry of distress. It's important to remember that the sour grapes is part of the sin of the world. It's important to reflect that that's what disappoints God. Much more, as it were, not our individual sins, although of course they do, because it's our individual sins that go to make the collective sin of the world. But I think when it's speaking of the Lord's vineyard, or the psalm, the vineyard of the Lord is the house of Israel, he's talking about collective sins, sins of the people, the whole people, sins of society. And that's what we see. Our individual sins don't explain all the misery that we see around us today in society, not just our society, societies around the world. It's a reminder that what often society wants to do is to set itself up, not as the vineyard of the Lord, but without being of the Lord. And that prevents his justice being realized. And so Jesus tells us then this parable. That's why all these things are linked together: Isaiah's lovely ballad, the psalm, St. Paul telling us not to worry about anything, we can bring it all to the Lord in prayer. The Lord offers this parable. It's giving us, as it were, an overview of salvation history. But the point that he's really wanting you to get to is the ambition of the tenants to take over the vineyard. It's 3 weeks we've had vineyard readings, but this week it's the tenants who want to take over and gain control and thereby ownership of the vineyard. And that's what Jesus is confronting them with, the unpleasant news that they are trying to usurp the place of God rather than working in his service. They begin to think and act as if they were like God. So they begin to claim divine rights over people's minds. We're all much more conscious now that you can't say what you think. You know, we were a country of free speech and you can say what you like. You can't, because political correctness has you hounded in all directions. And when they take over your mind, they then take over your life. And eventually want then to take over the claim to right to kill. And we know every so often we're reminded how many abortions go on. Not just here, of course, thousands here around the world. There's a leaflet about euthanasia and the things they won't tell you about that side of life. And it was Blessed John Paul who often spoke of a culture of death which pervading the world, which wants to take over the role of God. And Pope Benedict, many times since he was elected pontiff, but when he was in this country just about a year ago, when he was in his homeland last week, spoke these words about his concern at the marginalization of all religion, and particularly Christianity, that is taking place in some quarters, even in nations which place great emphasis on tolerance. He goes on, there are those who would advocate that the voice of religion be silenced. His words in Westminster Hall are well worth reading again. In Germany, he issued this powerful call for God to be placed in the center of society. He urged, lift high the torch of untarnished faith. Let us put our trust in God, whose power manifests itself above all in mercy and forgiveness. But his reminder is that some within society, some vociferous voices within it, are saying no more than the tenants in the story. This is the heir. Come on, let's kill him. And if we can't kill God, can't kill his son, let's silence him. But what we know, what's always proclaimed to us when we hear, they did kill the Son of God, but he didn't stay dead. It's the risen Lord who's with us. And we see the evidence, the altar, the cross, the window, and all those signs to us that whatever those tenants said, wanting to replace God, they can't. The church underground, the church in persecution, is often the stronger for all of that. And it was Jesus himself reminds us slightly in this bit of the gospel elsewhere. He's the keystone, rejected. And when they're trying to silence him, he said, try to silence us. Even the very stones will cry out because we are those living stones making a spiritual house built on the owner, God himself.